Hello, everybody. Welcome to our vital health topic for the month of March. This is Angelica, and I'm really excited to be here and to introduce a really cool and amazing, inspiring speaker and topic today. It's all about pharmaceuticals and the way that they can get us into a, kind of back us into a corner and make us more dependent and sick in the long run. I'm really, really excited to hear what our speaker Mihaela has to teach us today. So I know a few of you are still trickling in, but we're going to go ahead and we're going to get started. So I briefly just want to mention a few things about Mihaela, our guest speaker today. She is a reformed pharmacist. So she's our nutritional endocrinology practitioner candidate. She coaches in our year-long energy recharge inner circle program. And I think she's really interesting to have here and to teach us because she comes from the traditional Western medicine pharmaceutical world. So, you know, she has been in that world. She's been on the complete other side from what we like to do here, which is root cause, natural healing approach to health. And so I'm just really, really excited to hear what she has to say coming from the other side, so to speak, and what she can teach us about the body's natural healing mechanism and how pharmaceuticals can really back us into a corner and make it so the body actually can't heal itself. So a little bit about Mihaela. So she's a clinical pharmacist trained over the years, and she began to really just question all the drugs she was prescribing in her work. She realized a few of the drugs were actually originally prescribed for various symptoms, and the rest of the drugs were prescribed to cover the side effects of the original drug. So she found that it was just a whole host of drugs she had to give one person because the drugs were creating other secondary and tertiary problems for the patient. Currently, Mihaela works with clients seeking help with prediabetes, diabetes, gut health, and other chronic conditions. Her ultimate approach is to find the root cause of her patients' and clients' problems. Towards this goal, she incorporates common and advanced lab evaluations, genetic testing. She routinely looks at patients' medication and supplement list to assess nutritional deficiencies and potential overdoses. She has education and training, including a Bachelor of Science in Pharmacological Chemistry. She is a Doctor of Pharmacy and a Certified Functional Medicine Provider. So she has a lot of amazing credentials and a strong academic background. And she has come over to our side to help, you know, help all of you and all of us with root cause healthcare, the things that we know will help the body naturally heal itself, instead of needing to rely on drugs just to feel okay. So that's a little bit about Mihaela. And without further ado, I'd like to hand the call over to Mihaela now, and she's going to get started with her presentation. So I'm going to go on mute. Mihaela, you go ahead.
Thank you, Angelica. Thank you for the intro. I am so glad that you guys have come to listen to this talk. I think it's a super important topic as drugs are prescribed every single day to, and I'm pretty sure that we all know at least somebody in our family, if not ourselves, are taking a number of drugs. Considering that we are in Rita Marie's program, chances are that you're not taking some so many drugs or maybe none at all. But I'm sure that we all know somebody that takes a whole lot of them, a bucket full of them. So I want to introduce you to Maria. Maria was 47 years old when for the first time, she got diagnosed with hypertension. And during that period of her life, she was super stressed. She had just immigrated to the United States. She was working a minimal wage type of job. She was working night shift, and she had two college kids to put through school. So you can imagine she was super stressed, but the doctor never had any kind of conversations with her about any of that. Instead, just put her on her first antihypertensive medication. A year later, the blood pressure was not controlled, so he just went up on the dose. Then later on, the hypertension was still not controlled, and he put her on a second drug, and so on and so forth, until she ended up being on three drugs. And 5-6 years later, she developed diabetes, for which the same game started. First drug, that didn't control well all that well. She got put on a second medication, then the third medication. And a few years later, because the blood sugar was still not controlled, her doctor removed two of the oral medications and added insulin. This is a very common scenario. And as a clinical pharmacist working in the hospital, I always felt like I was giving one gigantic pill to the patients upstairs on the floors, basically saying, here's your medication for your disease state, and along with it, here's some more other medications that you might end up needing. And towards my dismay, every single time, those medications were actually dispensed to the patient, and the patient took them. I always wondered why on earth any patient could possibly be on 20 to 30 drugs. And I'm not talking about ICU patients who were intubated and every organ was failing. This is patients that were just on regular floors, sometimes cardiac floors, but still so many drugs were dispensed. This is another cartoon which is meant to be funny, but is really not funny, where the poor lady wants to pick up her medication and the pharmacist tells her, yeah, that's the medication that you are supposed to get, but that one is known to cause nausea, for which I'm giving you this other medication that will induce temporary blindness, which will counteract with yet another drug, and so on and so forth. And the reality is that adverse events around drugs are actually the third leading cause of death after heart disease and cancer. And I don't know how many patients are aware that the medications can be that dangerous, but they are. So every year there's about 1.3 million emergency room visits that are linked to adverse drug events. And about 350,000 patients each year need to be hospitalized for further treatment after emergency visits for adverse drug events. And this is what the government tells us. This is a statistic taken from the CDC. This is a pie chart that just shows us the blue portion represents what the drugs treat, and the red part what the side effects are, what side effects can cause. This was actually meant to be a cartoon, so I'm not saying that this is how it truly is for all the drugs, but it's pretty close. And just because I'm a pharmacist and I talk about adverse drug events, I realize that not everybody knows the definition of that, although it's intuitive. But let's go over the definition. So basically, an adverse drug event is when someone is harmed by a medicine. A serious adverse drug event is defined as an adverse drug event that will cause either permanent damage to the patient, either they will be placed in the hospital or the patient might actually die from the medication. So that's the definition of serious side effects. So that's why I'm saying this pie chart is really just a cartoon. It's not really all that for real, but the reality is that the number of side effects is high. The number of serious side effects is not quite that high, but when they are serious, as we said, death can be one consequence. The other one is permanent damage to the patient or hospitalization. The way I define side effects, I define them as noticeable side effects, which are things like nausea, drowsiness, obviously things that are you take notice of them, and they are noted in the package insert. Another type of side effects, the way I think of them, are the lesser known, and these are nutrient deficiencies, and they're often not mentioned in the package insert. And you might be asking, how come? Well, there's two reasons. One reason is that when a clinical trial is done, unless the investigator designed in the actual study a question to say, I want to know what the vitamin B12 level would be when the patient is on this drug, they're not going to look for it unless it's written in the protocol. Same thing with all the other nutrients. Another reason is that clinical trials are pretty small, statistically speaking. So the first phase of clinical trials usually enrolls about 20 to 80 patients. Phase two clinical trials usually look at about 200 to 300 patients. And phase three clinical trials are looking at thousands of patients. But if you really think about it, the, statistically speaking, to detect a side effect, the chances are smaller than when you actually release the drug to the market and now you have millions of people exposed to that drug. So that's how come the nutrient deficiencies might not be captured to be actually written in the package insert. However, one thing you will find is that a lot of the side effects that are noted in the package inserts will be symptoms of certain nutrient deficiencies. In fact, 50% of the drugs approved in the U.S. commonly deplete nutrients, and about 30% of the side effects from medications are actually related to drug-induced nutrient deficiencies. So the way I want you to think about the nutrients are in this manner. In order to build a house, we need concrete and we need bricks and wood, and that is the foundation of the house. In the same manner, carbs, proteins, and fats are the foundation of the human body. However, the foundation is useless without the vitamins and the minerals, because without this, you cannot regenerate or repair your tissue, your organs, and so basically health can deteriorate. Let's go over some mechanism of the nutrients depletion. It could be something very simple, just like drugs bind the minerals and the vitamins, causing them to be excreted. Or it can be something where the acidity of the gastrointestinal tract, when that is tinkered with, the food that we ingest, the drugs we ingest, are not going to be absorbed properly. Basically, let's say the digestion will actually not happen. And also, when the acidity is not where it needs to be, also the bile function will be compromised. And Even fats and proteins will be further malabsorbed from our gut. Another way to think of it is that when the minerals and the vitamins are depleted, certain enzymes will not be working. And when we think of enzymes, we think of vitamins. And so when those vitamins are either not there or they are inhibited, nutrient transport can be basically not working well. And so here I have an example like vitamin B12. Sometimes the vitamin B12 will be absorbed into the bloodstream, but when we are depleted of certain nutrients, the vitamin B12 will not be absorbed into the cell where it really is needed to do its work, to do its function. Another mechanism is by inhibiting enzymes involved in activating nutrients that we are ingesting. These nutrients are vitamins, minerals, as well as the carbs, proteins, and fats. Another example for this is, again, vitamin B12. If you ever get admitted to the hospital and the doctor might think that you need vitamin B12, most likely you will be either injected a form of vitamin B12 called cyanocobalamin, or it will be given to you in an oral form, but it's still in the form of cyanocobalamin. Cyanocobalamin is a molecule that's made in the lab. It's artificial, and it's not active. It's not an active form of vitamin B12. In order to get to the active form of vitamin B12, once in the body, this molecule will undergo a number of biochemical reactions that are dependent on minerals and vitamins to happen in order for us to get to a methylcobalamin, which is the active form of vitamin B12. And so, if we are deficient in vitamins, you can see how you potentially might be taking your vitamin B12, but you are not getting to the active form and you're not feeling any better than before. So let's talk about hypertension. The way I'm gonna, I divided this talk is to address two disease states. One is hypertension and the other one is diabetes. And we're gonna look at nutrient deficiencies and how they are interconnected with hypertension. And so let's dive in. Spectracell Laboratories gave me this chart, and I think it's absolutely amazing. It shows you how many vitamin deficiencies are linked to hypertension, and not just vitamins, but also minerals. So we see zinc, copper, magnesium, calcium, and then a whole slew of other vitamins. What I'm going to do, I'm going to talk about different classes of antihypertensive medications, and we're going to take a look at the nutrients that they deplete. So the ACE inhibitors is one of the most common antihypertensive classes out there, and there's drugs such as captopril, enalapril, quinapril, all the prils, basically. So if you ever hear somebody telling you about a drug that ends in pril, belongs to this class. That's just a pharmacy little trivia. But these drugs deplete sodium, vitamin B6, zinc, magnesium, coenzyme Q10, and I highlighted magnesium and coenzyme Q10 because I want you to observe a trend, and I also will be talking individually about these two nutrients. Angiotensin receptor blockers are drugs like irbesartan, losartan, valsartan, etc. And these drugs deplete zinc, calcium, phosphorus, and again, magnesium and coenzyme Q10. The beta blockers, such as atenolol, metoprolol, deplete coenzyme Q10 and melatonin. Calcium channel blockers, drugs such as nifedipine, verapamil, diltiazem, and amlodipine deplete potassium, vitamin D, calcium, and again, magnesium and coenzyme Q10. And then there's three classes of diuretics. The loop diuretics are drugs such as furosemide, bumetidine. Furosemide is also known as Lasix, so you might have heard your grandmother talk about it. It's one of the first drugs that the patients get put on when they develop hypertension. And again, look at the flora of vitamins and minerals that this drugs deplete, including magnesium. The thiazide diuretics are the hydrochlorothiazide, which is commonly also added in combination drugs. So if you have a hypertension medication that has a certain name and at the end you notice in capital letters HCT, that stands for hydrochlorothiazide, and what it really means is that drug is actually a combination of two drugs. And so the nutrient depletions are actually amplified. Notice that these drugs also deplete magnesium, potassium, sodium, zinc, and coenzyme Q10. And the potassium sparing diuretics also deplete magnesium, among other things. Well, let's talk a little bit about magnesium, but magnesium is rich in a number of foods. So I as a pharmacist, I always encourage the patients to, if they have to be on these drugs, I always encourage them to eat a lot of these foods, minus the bananas, especially if their blood sugar is also high. But we can see here that the cabbage, the cilantro, the parsley is rich in magnesium. Pretty much all the greens are going to be rich in magnesium. The avocado is rich in magnesium, a lot of nuts and chia seeds. So why do we even care about magnesium? The magnesium is important in more than 300 biochemical reactions in the body. It's known to regulate blood pressure by the same mechanism as the class of antihypertensive known calcium channel blockers, if you remember this chart. So the same mechanism. So magnesium will deplete, so when you take calcium channel blockers, it will deplete magnesium, which works through the same mechanism as these drugs. In other words, it will prevent the blood pressure from getting better. So it's a vicious cycle. Low magnesium causes high blood pressure. It's a vicious cycle. In fact, magnesium is the nature's calcium channel blocker without the side effects. Low magnesium also causes high blood sugar. So just to reiterate, remember Maria, she started with stress-causing hypertension, then she got put on medications that lower her magnesium, which now basically kept her hypertension not healing. So one vicious cycle. But in addition to that, over the years, because of magnesium deficiencies and most likely a few other deficiencies, Maria developed diabetes. And then she got put on diabetes medications, which caused more depletions, which led to more drugs being needed. And instead of her getting better over the years, she is just getting worse. So your prescription drugs without the nutrient replenishment most certainly is what keeps you sick. Now, if you are to replenish those nutrients, you are going to probably be better off than other people who are not replenishing the nutrients. So let's change gears and talk about diabetes for a little while. SpectraCell also provided this chart, and again, notice the number of vitamins, minerals, and amino acids that are needed. And when they are depleted, they may lead to diabetes. And magnesium is on the list, just like vitamin B12 is on the list, and coenzyme Q10 is on the list, if you remember from the trend of the antihypertensive drugs. So sulfonylureas are the class of anti-diabetes medications that are you have the glyburide, the glipizide, the glimepirides, and this is a very common drugs, common class of drugs for diabetes. Most likely These are one of the very first drugs that the patients will be put on. And these drugs deplete the coenzyme Q10. Again, coenzyme Q10. I hope you remember the trend. And the vitamin E, vitamin B12, and folic acid. And I highlighted B12 as well because I also want you to keep in mind this trend for the diabetes drugs. Metformin is a biguanide, and it's probably the most common drug that the diabetic patients are on. And funny enough, patients are on this drug even when they are contraindicated to be on this medication. So, for example, this drug is contraindicated for patients over 70 years of age, yet elderly people with diabetes are very commonly on this drug. And there's nothing they can do. So these drugs also deplete vitamin B12, and they also deplete coenzyme Q10. And insulin, since it's so common these days, even for patients who have type 2 diabetes, not just type 1, they deplete DHEA, which is a precursor to hormones like testosterone, which is crucial for our health, not just for male health, but also for female health. Here is a chart that I put together with the classes of medications for diabetes. There's actually 12 of them, and with the common drugs that are part of those classes. I added some of the side effects. The list is not exhausted. And the last column looks at the nutrient deficiencies that are known. And you will see that in most of the classes, I said that no research supporting nutrient depletions are available. And all that means is that it was not looked at in clinical trials. Therefore, we do not know. However, if you look at the list of the side effects, when, for example, look at the incretin mimetics, they cause nausea, diarrhea, and vomiting. Well, when you have nausea and vomiting, you're losing a lot of the electrolytes. You're losing the sodium, the potassium, the chloride, and the magnesium. And so is it safe to say that possibly these drugs will deplete magnesium along with the other electrolytes I mentioned? Sure. So, and remember the statistics that we were saying that about 30% of the side effects are caused by a nutrient depletion. So while they are not reported in the package insert, that doesn't mean they do not exist. Take a look at the pioglitazone and the rosiglitazone. They both are known to cause heart failure. Now, we know that coenzyme Q10 is highly beneficial for heart health. Could it be that these patients are depleting, or that these drugs are depleting the coenzyme Q10? Not according to the package insert, but possibly in reality. Again, just to reiterate, diabetes, patients get diagnosed with diabetes, they can put on medications will cause depletions like low magnesium and possibly other types of depletions, which will then cause the patient to have uncontrolled diabetes and possibly other problems. So let's talk now about vitamin B12. Vitamin B12 is highly important, especially for the diabetic patient, because vitamin B12 is associated with neuropathy and pain caused by neuropathy. So what other reasons are why vitamin B12 is important? It can protect also the brain cells from the radical damage. It's shown to reduce the pain associated with neuropathy, contributes to the creation of healthy DNA and RNA. Thus, it helps with repairing and regenerating of organs. It works with other B vitamins to form red blood cells to support the immune system, to improve the mood and protect the cardiovascular system and maintain overall energy levels. Early symptoms, in fact, show fatigue, digestive issues, nausea, and loss of menstruation in women. Advanced symptoms include nerve pain, mental health disorders, infertility, impaired immune function, and anemia. Vitamin B12 is usually found in animal products like the meats, milk, eggs, but it's also found in some nuts and seeds. But you probably have heard commonly that vegan patients should probably supplement this vitamin B12. So let's talk now about coenzyme Q10. As we mentioned earlier, it is vital and crucial to supplement coenzyme Q10 to protect the heart, especially when we have a good reason to believe that the patient will be deficient in coenzyme Q10. Coenzyme Q10 is very important because it assists hundreds of enzymatic reactions in the body. That's just a fancy way of saying that it's just the biochemical reactions in our body will not happen where it needs the coenzyme Q10. It makes energy by sparking the production of energy molecule ATP. It is famous for its role in heart, including congestive heart failure. And in fact, I have read about one of the leading world experts in congestive heart failure saying that most of his patients are actually deficient in coenzyme Q10. And when he repletes the coenzyme Q10 in high doses, the congestive heart failure symptoms subside significantly, oftentimes requiring no additional treatment. That's quite amazing. And also, coenzyme Q10 is a powerful antioxidant, so it protects cells from DNA damage. So it may have a role in anti-cancer effect. So when we have coenzyme Q10 deficiency, that may lead to heart failure, cancer, hypertension, and diabetes. So this chart is not there to scare anybody, but basically the bottom line is I want you to remember that the reason we eat is to make ATP, which is the cellular energy. So we take in carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. They will undergo a million biochemical reactions going through the citric acid cycle and then through the electron transport chain reactions to make ATP, which is the energy. I also want you to look at the little circles. Doesn't matter what the color they are, but basically they represent different vitamins and minerals. And all these minerals and vitamins are needed for all these biochemical reactions to happen. And I want you to notice that in the citric acid cycle, vitamin B12 is needed in two separate places and coenzyme Q10 is needed in one. So is there a big surprise that when we are deficient in either one of them, fatigue is one of the symptoms? No. This is a bigger chart saying the same thing, but in more detail. But again, bottom line, we eat to make fuel, which will then lead to cellular energy through the electron transport chain. And this is a bigger version of the same thing from the previous page. And I want you to see that, again, there's two biochemical reactions in this chain that absolutely requires coenzyme Q10. And when we are deficient in coenzyme Q10, we are not going to make ATP, which basically will cause us to be super fatigued, but it will also cause heart disease, because the heart requires a lot of energy to do its functions. One more time, just to drive it home, your prescription drugs without nutrient replenishment might be what keeps you sick. And so if you're one of those patients that needs to be on medications, that's okay, but you need to replenish the nutrients. Coenzyme Q10 is found in a lot of greens, a lot of beans and nuts and seeds and animal products, citrus and berries. So give yourself the medicine that you really need. Do you really need the toxic pills and the surgery, or do you need to just look for the root cause, remove obstacles to health, modify your diet and your lifestyle? And if none of that works, then go to the medications. Again, I believe that drugs have their role at some point, but definitely not as the first resort. Another part that nobody has, or at least the medical doctors are not talking about, is the stress. So stress can cause disease. Stress is not due on the flower. Stress is a parasite on the flower. It will kill it. So the stress is highly important in disease states, and we should remove the cause of stress if possible, if we even want the drugs to work better. So this pharmacist seems to be a little in tune with that, and he tells the patient, you know, this antidepressant works best if you take it with water lapping near your hammock on a Caribbean beach. How fun would that be? Would that relieve your stress? Probably temporarily, but then you'll have to come to real life again. And you really need to find ways to deal with the stress. So in this talk, we talked mostly about prescription drugs. But if you want to go deeper, learning about nutrient deficiencies caused by the most common over-the-counter drugs, just go to drugnutrients.com and download my free ebook. Because I really believe that the over-the-counter drugs are as guilty as the prescription drugs. And I think they are even more dangerous than prescription drugs, because the doctor doesn't know you are taking them, your pharmacist doesn't know you are taking them, and in fact, you might be much more casual about them, because after all, they're over-the-counter, so they must be safe, correct? Well, that's not quite true. In fact, some of these drugs will not even be approved to the market in our days, based on the new laws surrounding clinical trials, and yet they are over-the-counter. So if you want to find me and ask me any more questions, you can find me always on my website, naturopathicpharmacist.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn or on Facebook, Dr. Mihaela Grita. So that concludes our talk, and if there are any questions, I would be happy to answer.
Thank you so much. That was an amazing, amazing presentation. I have some questions, but I'm going to check first and see if we have any in the Q&A box.
Okay.
People have been pretty quiet on the chat, but I'll just go through some comments from our audience that I would love to dive in with some questions of my own that came up. So Denise says that her husband is taking some of the drugs you mentioned, and Martha added that she's read that taking B12 while on metformin, if you take the B12 while on metformin, your body will not assimilate it. So could this insufficiency contribute to neuropathy? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I think that would vary from patient to patient, and I touched a little bit on that based on the mechanisms of depletion. So if for some reason other nutrients are also missing, those biochemical reactions to activate the vitamin B12 to bring it to methylcobalamin, assuming he's not supplementing with that directly. So that could be one mechanism. If he is supplementing directly with vitamin B12, another problem might be that the enzymes needed to transport the vitamin B12 into the cells are needing help. And so when that happens, one thing you could do is have the doctor test for the serum levels. If the serum levels are very high while supplementing with B12, and yet you don't see any improvement, there's another test that you can look at, and SpectraCell, that's what they do. They actually, but there's other labs out there that do the same thing. They look at intracellular levels. And so if the intracellular level is low and the serum level is high, then definitely the transport is the issue. So these are a few things to look at. And then the other idea is if the doctor ever tested the vitamin B12 to begin with, because if the patient has enough B12, but might be low in chromium or zinc or magnesium, maybe it's the other supplementations that are the problem, not necessarily just the B12. Although with metformin, B12 is one of the problems. So it's possible that that's the cause. But take a look. It could be other vitamins. It could be vitamin E. It could be vitamin B6. Folic acid, but also if you look at this chart, it's chromium, it's vitamin C, inositol, all kinds of other deficiencies could be at fault. So sometimes if there's no results just with vitamin B12, it could be because there's other nutrients that are deficient.
Wow. It's so cool hearing you talk about the nuts and bolts of the vitamins and all these specific nutrients, and you know exactly what the body needs to not just to supplement it, but to assimilate them. It's really, really inspiring. Well, I have a couple of questions, if you don't mind. So I was wondering, you know, you talked about stomach acid as like the very root cause of a lot of these vitamin and mineral imbalances.
Yeah.
So how did that kind of show up and like what, you know, in your pharmacology practice, like how did you kind of start to realize that? And then what's your favorite way to bring that back into balance with your clients, the stomach acid problem?
So for example, like when you look at lab tests, if the patients are deficient in protein and you look at the patient and the patient looks well fed, but their labs show very poor protein levels. The fatty acids, they're very low. Then you look for intracellular nutrients, and more often than not, you're going to see a huge imbalance there. That makes you think, well, what's going on in the gut? Is it acids, the acid level that's not working, and so digestion is not happening? And so remember, when we eat the food, you get the protein together with the carbs, together with fats, and intertwined in there, you're going to have the vitamins and the minerals. And so when that digestion is incomplete, sometimes those minerals and vitamins do not get cleaved off from their original, whatever they were bound to. So not only that your protein levels are going to be impaired and your muscle tone will be poor and you're not going to make hormones because your fat is not going to be absorbed, but also your minerals and vitamin levels will be poor. And so that's kind of one way, but there's other ways to for that to get impaired, but this is one way. And also remember, when the acid the pH in the stomach has to be about as acidic as the acid in the car's battery. When that becomes more alkalinized, although it's still acidic, and so people that have acid reflux will tell you that it burns bad, but it's not acidic enough, the signal to the gallbladder to release the bile doesn't happen. And so then the bile cannot finish off digestion in the small intestine. So, and also, certain bacteria love high, more of an alkaline pH. So there's one bacteria that comes to mind right now is H. pylori that really doesn't like your guts to be too acidic. And so, it goes when the acidity in your stomach is impaired, again, digestion is impaired, and also sometimes overgrowth of not friendly bacteria can happen. And so when that happens, those bacteria will eat pretty much all the nutrients you ingest. So that will also lead to depletions.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You said a lot there, but like, it seems like you really defined that classic Western modern dilemma of being overfed and undernourished. So that was really, really cool how you described that. So I'm curious, now that you're a reformed pharmacist, and I imagine you work with a lot of clients who are still depending on prescription or over-the-counter drugs. How you know, in the medical world, the doctors are always trying to keep people comfortable. Let's keep them comfortable. Let's keep symptoms at bay. How do you work with people to kind of, you know, get them from that place of just wanting to feel good and just wanting relief to really going to the root causes and then, you know, giving them the courage to back off of the drugs? How do you work with people that way?
Well, again, by finding the root cause and finding out why their symptom happens in the first place, just by eliminating that cause, they start feeling better. And then they realize that they don't really need their drugs. But then another way to look at it is that basically, if I determine that there's a lot of, and sometimes the nutrient deficiencies is not the root cause, that's also an effect, but nobody's looking at that. And so in a sense, it's more of a patch it up type of thing, but it's only temporarily until we find the root cause. And so I had patients that, in fact, I can recall one patient who has severe diabetes, and I put him on just some vitamins that are commonly depleted in diabetes, and he texted me at work, like, jumping up and down of joy because he has so much energy, and for the first time he felt like doing something instead of moping around because he had no energy. And so when people see this kind of results, they're much more inclined to say, okay, well, let's look at all the drugs. In addition, a lot of times not all drugs are needed. And so what happens there, especially to elderly patients, it happens a lot where they might be seeing their pulmonologist and they might see the nephrologist and then the cardiologist. And it's funny that in this day and age, sometimes the doctor's offices do not know that the other doctor prescribed the same medication as this doctor. And it might not be quite the same, but it might be in the same class. And people don't realize that the drugs are in the same class, especially if the drug is referred to in their brand name, they're not going to figure it out. If it's in a generic name, they might have a chance because they'll realize that they all end the same. Remember my prills, all the captopril and allopril, lisinopril, they all end the same. So it might trigger a thought to say, well, aren't these two drugs the same? But if they are prescribing their brand name, nobody will figure it out unless the pharmacist tells them that. The problem is patients also might be going to more than one pharmacy. Sometimes if they see the cardiologist and he's in the south side of the town, they might just go into a pharmacy over there. And if the cardiologist is in the east side, they might just get out of the doctor's office and go to a pharmacy right close by, get it over with before they get home. So what happens, not even the pharmacist can keep an eye on what really is happening. And so a lot of times I notice polypharmacy like this when the patients don't really need those drugs because they already are on one. And so they are really overdosed, and so that can cause or enhance the nutrient depletions.
Mm. Wow, I didn't know that. I didn't realize that, you know, going to a different pharmacist every time means that you lose that continuity of care. So you're saying that you really noticed when people were just overdoing, getting duplicate drugs, and you noticed because you saw the same people over and over.
Yeah, like I talked to my aunt in California, and she's like, yeah, somebody put me on this like Sinopril, and I'm taking an Allopril, and I'm like, wait, what? But, you know, she's 70-some years old. And she's not in the field of medicine. She doesn't have a background in medicine, so she doesn't know. But another problem is, so, you know, for example, if you always go to your Walgreens, I think their computer system should be talking to each other. But if you go to one day to a private pharmacy, one day you go to CVS, tomorrow you go to Walgreens, they do not talk. They don't have a system that talks to each other. So you're not going to know. And that's the problem with the doctors too. Like, so if you're part of a system I cannot think of a system name right now, but not all the health systems have a system that it's all online and everybody gets to see what's going on. So that's why the doctors don't know about what the other one did. So.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. So just, it's so easy for so many drugs to go into the patient's list and nobody questions anything. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm.
I think a few of our listeners had another follow-up question to the B12 thing, because we talked about that earlier, the other nutrients that are needed to convert B12 into the active form. So Denise wants to know, would you take the other vitamins along with the B12 if you're on metformin? And I think she was referring to the CoQ10. I think she was wondering, kind of what other vitamins you need in order to get that B12 to get activated and make sure that your body can actually utilize what you're supplementing.
Yeah. So that's a very good question. And so I would venture to say yes, but probably the safest route would be to test. And I'll tell you why. So for example, for myself, I had some insulin resistance. I didn't have diabetes. And I heard that chromium is an amazing thing for diabetes. Great. So I took some chromium, but I didn't take it for too long because I didn't notice much of a difference after like 30 days. So I stopped. And then about a year later, I actually did the nutrition test, the micronutrient test from SpectraCell to see if I actually, what is it that I'm missing? Because there's so many vitamins and so many nutrients. And I felt that I was just kind of having educated guess, but it was still a guess. And so when I actually tested myself, my chromium levels were normal. However, my coenzyme Q10 was low, and I'm not taking any drugs. But for some reason, my dad level was low. So when I took coenzyme Q10, my blood sugar improved. So what I'm saying is that, yes, vitamin D is common to be low in diabetes. Chromium is common to be low. Coenzyme Q10 is common. Magnesium, B12. But we don't really know what is your individual picture until you you look. And so if that's not a possibility, yes, I would kind of mess around taking vitamins, and I would do them one at a time as opposed to a whole cocktail, just so you figure out what is the cause or what was the missing element.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a fascinating story. So it wasn't until you actually looked at did your NutriEval. For those of you who don't know, that's a really great test. Which lab is that by again?
I use SpectroCell right now, but there's other tests. Mm-hmm. Vibrant does it. Their approach is slightly different. So why I like SpectroCell in particular is, and I'm not suggesting everybody to go to SpectroCell. I'm just saying why I like them. But what they do, they draw blood. They separate the white blood cells, and then they feed the white blood cells and make them grow. And then they make them grow with separate nutrients. And so if the cells respond better at a certain nutrient, that means you are deficient. So they literally look at the white blood cell in action. And so that's how they determine their nutrient deficiency. Vibrant, for example, what they do is just they count. They take the white blood cells and they look at that moment how much magnesium you had in there, how much vitamin B12, and that's also a very good test. So both of them are very good. And I'm sure there's other tests out there. I think Genova does something similar. I'm just not familiar with them.
Got it. Well, that sounds like a really great tool for people who, like you, like we're supplementing, are supplementing with specific nutrients and not getting results, then maybe this would be the next step to assess what's actually going on, why your cells aren't getting the supplements. Okay.
Yeah.
This is great.
Definitely, I would say test, don't guess, because while the guess can be a very educated guess, and you might be spending more time and more money just kind of going from door to door, figuring out, is this the right door? No? Okay, go to the next one. And you could be losing years figuring out what's really the root cause. So.
Oh, absolutely. I am with you there. And it's also tiring to try a lot of things and to not
and
feel better.
Yeah, and
yes, very, absolutely. I'm so glad that you said that. Well, I think Beatriz says that she had an awesome pharmacist who actually twice refused to sell her certain meds. He talked to her doctor and convinced the doctor to even change the prescription. So, hey, look at that. That's a positive pharmacist experience.
Yeah.
Well, Martha says she lives in a
so.
Yeah, sometimes things go well. That's really nice to hear those stories. Martha says she lives in a small town, and the doctor asks, which is your pharmacy, keeps you on file. The pharmacy with small real estate tend to be more personable. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the takeaway message today is, like, find a pharmacist that you like, know, and trust, and keep seeing them.
that's the final point. If the pharmacist doesn't catch it, you go to the deep end. You know, that's the last point, the triple check. And so if the pharmacist doesn't have all the parts in front of them, you know, there's a bigger chance they'll miss it. They might still miss it. They're human, but you know, to the best of our ability, that's what you want to do. And in in certain states, there's such a program, like a big pharmacies like Walgreens, CVS, and small pharmacies do it too, but only in very few states because it's not paid. But in a state like California, I believe, Massachusetts, maybe Colorado, a couple of other states, the pharmacists actually do get paid for the patient to bring their bag of drugs and for them to just take a look at it and literally assess, are you taking more than one drug in the same class? Are there interactions? Are there other food-drug interactions? And, you know, I would add that a pharmacist like me also would look at supplement drug interactions, supplement food interactions, and even supplement interactions, because the supplements are also not immune to that. So,
And over there. Martha said her doctor actually got mad when we questioned him about his prescriptions for her father. She says the pharmacist read the side effects and advised that they question their doctor. So there's another heroic pharmacist story. Woohoo!
Yeah.
Great. Well, now we're hearing all these great stories. It's really like, you know, it really shows that some pharmacists are checking, and they're checking the doctor's work, which is awesome and protects the patient. But are there any like critical questions you think that people should be asking their pharmacist when they pick up a new order, they start a new medication? What would you say is like a good question to sort of check and make sure everything is okay?
I think especially people that are on a number of drugs should have a written list with their drugs. And when they go to get another drug, show it to the pharmacist and say, hey, I'm on all these other drugs. I want to make sure that your list matches with mine. And are there any problems? And I would have not just the name of the drug, but also the dose. Because if you are maxed out on a certain drug and now you are getting prescribed another drug that's similar or in the same class, obviously you're definitely going to be overdosing. Where if you are just in an entry-level type of thing, maybe it's not quite as dangerous, but you know, the pharmacist needs to assess how urgent things are and, you know, do they need to literally grab the phone the next second, or do they to call the doctor, or do they have a day, you know, something like that. And considering that they're very busy and usually understaffed, that would be nice for the pharmacist. But so that's why I think ultimately it's safe to have the whole regimen and know. And also I would include the vitamins in there because sometimes, especially if we take supplements that include more than one vitamin, we might actually be overdosing in certain areas. If all of them include magnesium, all of them include, I don't know, vitamin D, we might be taking too much. So not all the pharmacists will be up to par on that one, but some will, and they will look at it if they know. So.
Got it. So essentially create a list and ask your pharmacist to double check the doctor's work, really, and make sure there's no unwanted interactions, not overdosing. These are awesome tips, really. And I'm sure a lot of people just really trust their doctors and wouldn't give a second thought to what the doctor told them to go pick up at the pharmacy. So thank you for sharing that. That's really valuable.
Yeah. And another thing is, if they've been admitted to the hospital, then released, now they have the old list and now they have the new drug list. And so before they leave the hospital, I would ask the nurse or the pharmacist, if they have access to the pharmacist in the hospital or even the doctor, to tell them, okay, so tell me one more time, do I just completely throw away the previous list and keep this one? Or do you want me to combine the two? Or what do you want me to do? Because that is one of the probably, when I worked in ER shifts, that was probably one of the most common reasons people would be readmitted to the hospital, because they would go home and now they would have the new list of drugs and the old list of drugs, and they would just take them both.
Oh, wow.
You'll be surprised what people would do because they're confused. And potentially nobody explained, potentially they didn't understand, but whatever the reason, that happens. So now most hospitals, what they have a nurse or a pharmacist that will sit down with the patient and go over the drugs from home. But still, the patients are very confused. So that's why if you have it written, even if you're tired, if you're drowsy, if you, and you can't remember, you have it on paper. So
absolutely. Wow. That is, these are such great tips. I think it's going to help a lot of our listeners and their loved ones. I think Dr. Rita Marie had a hand up. I'm not sure if she would like to come and join.
Okay.
Dr. Rita Marie, did you want to add anything? I saw your hand. If anybody else would like to come on and ask a question, we have a few more minutes. If you're on the phone, you could press star 2 to raise your hand. There should also be an option to raise your hand on the right side of your call screen. If you'd like, you could come and ask a question and talk to us live. No. All right. Well, I think that'll wrap it up. I just wanted to reiterate, thank you so much for being here, Mihaela. This was such a valuable conversation, and I think this is going to help a lot of people because a lot of us are on a journey, and there are still a lot of us that are using these prescription drugs and to know how to do it safely and to work on the root cause at the same time. It's been really helpful. I wanted to reiterate to everybody that Mihaela has provided a free gift for you. It's we will post the slides with the recording, so you will have access to those. But she had it on her slide as drugnutrients.com, so www.drugnutrients.com, and I put that in the chat as well. And so everyone go to that URL I just gave. You can download her free gift, and we'll post the slides later with the recording. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to unmute everybody so we can all say goodbye. So on three, you can go ahead and say bye. We'll sign up. One, two, three. Everybody, you can chat. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you all.